So I would never get on there regardless. That's the reason why I'm in cybersecurity. Everybody knows this. I've never got on here and talked down bad about blue collar workers. Why? That's my background. Family members come from a blue collar family. I respect money people got to earn. I respect that. I'll never be too high up to talk down on somebody on the way they choose to make a living and take care of their family. It's just me today. Cyber Shorty is busy, and I need to get an episode out to y'all. It's been a minute since I did a solo episode, but I'm going to try to keep the momentum that we have been grinding for. Now, if you are still kind of watching this on Textual Chatter, please make sure you subscribe to the Textual Talk YouTube channel, as this will be where all new Textual Talk video podcast episodes will live. I'm trying to figure out where I'm going to put the audio ones, but all the new video ones will now be on this channel. Now, before we get into today's topics and everything, first things first is if I got any Shy fans out there, the Shy finally ended. I believe it almost went on a 10-year run. I know COVID missed up like one of the years, but I remember first watching it in 2017, and it was those first two seasons were fire. And then it kind of got wonky in the middle. And then Duda came and like was the big bad, and he really kind of made everything like better. So honestly, I would say like if it would have ended after Duda died, I think it would have been perfect. But all in all, still one of my favorite shows that I kind of grew up watching, or I was already grown up, so I guess like became more of an adult watching, far as now having my own family. When I first started, I didn't have a family and all the different things. And they touched on some interesting topics. I do think this last season was rushed and very sloppy. I can always tell when it's the last season or if the studio didn't give them an amount of episodes they wanted. Things just get rushed and they are not fleshed out and they don't make any sense. But shout out to all the actors on that show. Really appreciate all the good work you did. And you guys gave us a show that people will be watching for years to come. And now, another thing, just a segue before we get into the topics and everything else, is it's Q3. People are still hiring. For those of you that follow me on Instagram, or by the time you see this on LinkedIn, I had a client within 3 months. I almost increased his salary from about $50,000. So that's a big, major one. Great return on investment. And no, I'm not pitching to say, hey, I can help you increase. If you give me, I'm going to help you increase your salary by 50K in 3 months. That's not what I'm saying. I could definitely say that 90 days thing, but no, it happens for different people. Sometimes it's a week, sometimes it's 3 months, sometimes it's a year. All I know is whenever it happens, it's good that it happens. This is an interesting job market. Not everybody who is qualified is actually getting the job. So shout out to him. I got some other clients that I'm waiting to make some announcements for. So like I tell y'all, man, if I have did a consult with you in the past or you didn't think it was the right time, I'm telling you now is the right time. Q3, people are still getting hired. By the time Q4 comes, there's still some hiring, but it starts to go down as the holidays approach. So you definitely want to make sure that you are having your resume updated, having your LinkedIn looking good. And yeah, and also while we're bringing up LinkedIn and job searching, I have a doozy for you guys today. The last two episodes, you've heard me read Reddits about job scams. Well, now I'm going to actually show you guys one today on camera. But first things first, let me go ahead and get my drops out the way real quick. Hang on, where we at? Where we at? Here we go.
You are now watching the Textual Talk, hosted by A.C. and Silent Shorty.
Hit the like button.
Y'all know what it is, man. Hit the like button. And you listening to this while you're going to work or whatever, gotta wake y'all up with them gunshots, man. But let's talk about what today's topics will be. Major topics we got right here: the OpenAI, and I believe it's called Huggable. They had a hack. Iran is attacking the U.S. water and industries. Yeah, U.S. water and energy Industries. There we go. Chick-fil-A had a breach. Yes, 13,000 people. It's not that much, but a lot of y'all love that chicken. So let's talk about that one. Fake cloud AI apps are putting rats on people's computers. Rats are remote access Trojans. So, and then we also have, like, this is the bottom one, another job scam exposed. Let me make this bigger, actually. There we go. Another job scam exposed. So, first things first, guys, you know what to do. Like, subscribe, hit the like button. Matter of fact, if you're watching the premiere of this, the best thing you can do is hit the thumbs up button. Guys, show YouTube that you like this content. You did pretty well on that first episode. We're expecting the same amount of love on this next episode as we continue to keep on climbing. But let me get that first topic into you guys. So, Iran linked hackers target U.S. water and energy. Imagine turning on the tap in your kitchen only to realize the water coming out isn't safe to drink, not because of a broken pipe down the street, but because someone sitting at a laptop 5,000 miles away decided to compromise the facility. The U.S. government, through CISA and FBI, just issued an urgent high-level warning. Iranian-backed threat actors are actively disrupting American water utilities and industry providers. Now, when we hear the word hacking, we usually think about stolen credit card numbers or leaked corporate emails, but this is fundamentally different. These attackers are going after operational technology, or OT. And in the past, I want to say last week, we actually talked about another OT attack. So OT is only ramping up. Yo, OT with the Coca-Cola breach. OT is only ramping up. And if you can get in that lane, get in it, stay in it, you'll be set. And also the industrial control systems. These are the literal digital switches, valves, and software that regulate chemical balances in municipal water supplies and manage power grids. So why is this happening now? A lot of these water facilities, especially in smaller towns and municipalities, rely on older equipment like programmable logic controllers that were connected to the internet for remote monitoring without adequate security measures. Some were literally left online with default factory passwords. Iranian linked groups found these exposed devices and began targeting them directly. It's a sobering wake-up call for critical infrastructure. Cyber warfare isn't just a quiet battle happening on our military servers or financial institutions anymore. It is spilling over into the basic physical services we rely on to survive every single day. And yeah, that's facts. We talked about this a lot, and you've heard the government talk about how critical that our infrastructure is not protected in the best way, or really just not being maintained in the best way. Those are the things that they're going to attack, and now they're going to have to. It's a lot. Like this thing said, hey, a lot of these things they've been in service for years, old default passwords. They have to go through and check all these things in order to make sure that we're safe. Those are some of the water, energy, how are you going to cool your house off, all those different things. If you can't do that, it's a wrap. It's nothing you can do. And especially in Texas, it's hot outside. You're not going to get no cooler. Man, that's rough. So hopefully they get on it. This Iran and U.S. thing has been going crazy for the whole year. It's not going to stop. I don't know if it'll ever stop, especially with who's in office. So all I can say is get ready, get your anchor or whoever else they sell the battery powered deals for situations like that where you can plug it in and still have some juice in case of emergency. So, yeah, just start thinking about your survival guys, survival plans, get in the gym. You never know when you have to run or something. So I thought that was pretty interesting right there. The AI industry just got rocked by an unprecedented security breach, and it's igniting a massive, messy feud over how these tech giants handle their secrets. OpenAI, the team behind ChatGPT, suffered a major internal hack. While the company kept details close to its chest, reporters indicate that intruders managed to slip into internal messaging systems and steal system details about the design and inner workings of their AI technologies. That hit like a megaton bomb in the tech community, but the real story is the fallout. Clem DeLoog, the CEO of Hugging Face, which is essentially the massive open source hub for AI developers, publicly called out OpenAI, demanding what he terms radical transparency. His argument is hard to ignore. When you build a massive closed source black box AI systems that millions of companies depend on, keeping a breach quiet creates a massive systemic risk. If hackers compromise an AI company, what did they actually get? Did they steal user chat logs, corporate secrets pasted in the prompts, or worse, did they alter the underlying training data? Now, I'm going to stop it right there because this situation is AI governance 101. It's what we've been talking about for the longest when it comes to using AI is, okay, yeah, we believe it's right, but if it's been hacked or altered, and so what is spitting out to us is not what's it's supposed to say, it's going to be the big issue. And it's the reason why I don't think AI is going to be the end all be all of everything, because you have to make sure that what's being reported is doing what it's supposed to do. And let's take it off of just information gathering. All these companies want to get AI agents. You can't just let your agents run and just assume that they're doing the right thing. The AI agents, they'll have to do QA on them to make sure, hey, AI, say, let's say, for example, you have a AI agent that can pull emails and block hashes and block senders. You can't rely on the AI agent that just said they did it. You have to now go verify through the tools and make sure that's what it says. And so this is going to be a lot of zero trust game that this is happening, and more safeguards, and it should be transparency. A lot of users use your platform. A lot of companies use your platform. You need to be transparent with this. That is why the publicly traded companies, they have so many days where they have to report the details of their breach and what happened. Now, they don't always tell you the nitty-gritty, but they try to be as transparent as possible. The Lang stance is that open source AI allows the public to inspect, audit, and patch vulnerabilities, whereas closed AI leaves everyone in the dark when things go wrong. As AI becomes the central nervous system of modern businesses, the era of keeping security incidents quiet behind closed doors might finally be coming to an end. Yep. I agree. I think it's coming to an end. I think that these will still create more and more jobs. So it's very important that the people who are interviewing now, or not even interviewing, but you want to get an AI, start researching all these different AI attacks and what happened. How were they compromised? Why? Because a lot of the companies you interview with, one of the questions is going to be, how are you keeping up with AI? Have you used it? What do you know about it? Bring up stuff like this. Bring up stuff like this. It shows that you're engaged and you are staying abreast of new knowledge versus not knowing anything about it at all. So, yeah, definitely do that. So let me see if they got a picture or something for this. All right, so here we go. Fake Claude AI app spreading Sectop Rat via Bing ads. So if you search for a new productivity or AI tool on Bing recently, stop what you're doing and pay very close attention to this next story. For those of y'all don't know, Bing is pretty much Microsoft's Google. That's more so embedded in, I would say it used to be Internet Explorer, but now it's Edge in their Edge browsers. Cybercriminals have brought up top-tier sponsored and placement on Bing search results for Anthropic's popular AI assistant, Claude. When users search for Claude AI desktop app, the very first link at the top looks completely official. It features crisp Anthropic branding, a sleek download button, and a domain designed to fool a quick glance. You know what? Let's see something. So when people search Claude desktop app, this is what they see. So I thought that this was pretty interesting, the fact that they see this when they are trying to get Claude. So check this out. Let's see. Persistence on the system is achieved through another executable named Docker. Let's go back something real quick. So the attackers use a malicious Claude artifact hosted on Claude's legitimate domain, the tactic that has been used at the beginning of the year to push macOS malware. Researchers at managed security company Hunters found that the malicious Claude artifact downloaded 7,100 times before Anthropic removed it, directed visitors to websites that hosted a fake installer named Claude desktop.exe. However, the file is a legitimate JetBrains Chromium component that sideloads a malicious DLL, libsif.dll, to deliver the Sectop Wrap remote access Trojan with info stealing capabilities. And persistence on the system is achieved through another executable named docker-desktop.exe, which installs a scheduled task. So I'm going to pause it right here. Let me go back bigger real quick. So I'm going right here because if you're doing a SOC role or if you are doing instant response, whatever, if you're interviewing, a lot of times they're going to say, how would you check for persistence? So right here, they just told you that they download this separate executable that will set up a scheduled task. Scheduled task is one of the main ways that attackers will have gain persistence on your host. So just think about that. And yeah, I'm just going back to reading what I was reading, but I just want to put y'all on game there. Hunter says that the various loaders and staging components used in infection chain feature anti-analysis mechanisms, including VMP or VM protect packing, shader timing checks, GPU and VRAM checks, and virtual machines VM detection. The SecTop Rat malware was recently observed being distributed via castle loader campaigns and clickfix attacks. The malware uses the Ether hiding techniques to retrieve a working command and control address via Ethereum BNB smart chain transactions. SecTop Rat, also known as Arret Client 2, has been active since 2019 and is an information stealer with hidden virtual network computing functionality. It allows remote hands-on operations and real-time interaction with the compromised systems. The malware targets user passwords, credit card data, files, browser logins, and cookies, FTP credentials, data from various messaging clients, including Discord and Telegram, Steam, and VPN products. It's crazy. It's getting scary good. In an interesting twist, Hunter reports it used Cloud Opus 4.8 to assist with shader emulation, cryptographic reconstruction, and .NET code analysis. Analysis of the decrypted .NET payload helped attribute the attacks to the SecTop Rat operations or closely related fork and opened the path to infrastructure analysis. At that stage, the researchers found 10 domains registered to the same email address since December 2025, with one of them previously linked to the SteelC distribution and seized during Operation Endgame. Huntress does not have enough evidence to attribute the fake agent campaigns to a specific known threat cluster. Users looking for software should trust official websites and download portals instead of search results, especially sponsored ones. All right. So I thought that was pretty cool. To show everybody exactly what's going on out here with the fake cloud. So just be careful of what you're downloading and really pay attention to that domain. A lot of times that domain will look just like what you're looking for, but there will always be some inconsistencies on the page. So definitely watch out for that. Now, what's interesting is I wonder on these hosts, were these at companies or just regular end users? And if they were, what type of at-home EDR they had? Now, for me, this ain't unsponsored or whatever, but I do like malware bytes. I put malware bytes like on all of my machines, and it's pretty capable at catching a lot of things. I never really had any issues out of malware bytes. So if you're looking for something to put on your machines, put malware bytes on there. It's pretty fast. It doesn't slow down your computer. And yeah, it's good. Now they got a whole little suite of things now, like with identity. I think they have like VPNs, they have virtual sandbox, all the different type of stuff, and you can block stuff directly on your machine. So shout out to them for that. Now, since we were talking about phishing and having fun, I have to set the stage here. So let me go to scene three real quick. All right. So earlier I was telling you that one of the things I wanted to talk to you about is being aware of job scams, right? And so, all right, so here we go. Let me paint the picture for you, okay? So what I typically do is I have a lot of different consultations. I'll go back through and look through notes of people who I believe could be a good fit but maybe weren't ready at the time to do coaching with me. And so I was going through my LinkedIn messages and remember this one guy, I reached out to him, and I was like, hey, man, how's it going since we had our consult? Oh, it's cool, man. I got this assessment from this job, and I'm gonna be working on that this week. So I said, hey, send it to me. So I'm getting ready to show you guys the pictures, And then in the comments, and you see this, like, leave your reactions to what you believe when you first see these things, right? And I'm gonna tell you what immediately got my attention. So, let's see. All right, so first of all, this is what it sent to me. And I never heard of this company. So I actually went and looked this company up when he sent it to me. And so, look at this. So screening and testing. So number one, here's a red flag right here. It's a PDF, and it doesn't look very convincing, in my opinion. And it's like, it's saying Canada name, but if you sent this to me, you should already know the name and this person's name. So what did I immediately go do? I went and looked this person up on LinkedIn. I was, okay, it was, you know, I want to see if this is a legitimate person or not. And so I started looking at these questions. I said, this is some stuff you can just BS and lie about. Like all this stuff. Because I remember something similar like this happening possibly to me when I was younger. So let me get the next one. So what got me is I looked at all this stuff, right? But here's the kicker. This thing's supposed to be remote. Now, I ain't never heard of IT, entry-level IT role paying up to $137,000. I didn't even look up. Let me see. Also, so that was the instant red flag to me. I said, ain't no way possible they finna give you these Googleable questions and consider you for this role. It's just, it's too good to be true. So what did I end up doing? Let me show you what I ended up doing real quick. Sorry I don't have this all did the best like I should, but I said, okay, first things first, let me go look at this address. And so this was, well, actually, let me back up. Did I mark out? Let me double check real quick. I want to make sure I marked out my guy's name and crap. I think I did. Yes, I did. Okay. All right. Before we get here, let me show you what I looked at. Because you was like, I ain't no way. This is the initial email they sent him. And let me make this smaller so y'all can see it. All right, so check this out. I looked through this, and I was getting him to send me the, he sent me this message, but I want him to actually send me the actual message so that I can look at the headers. And I analyzed it as well, and we caught up on some things. Number one, that domain, that's the domain I just showed y'all that it pretty much doesn't exist anymore. So, you know, they just stood it up for phishing. But I just felt like this was odd. Like, typically, stuff like this may be a first dot last, but this is a long name. Like, too many companies I don't know have this, like, long domain name. It's the email. They normally shorten it. Secondly, so the date they sent this to him was on July 24th. However, in that email, it says, deadline, please return your work by the end of business today, Monday, July 27th, 2026. So that's a misspelling and doesn't make sense. What do you mean the end of business today? Did you mean the end of business day, Monday? But anyway, that's an inconsistency. We already looked at the PDF, the assessment. It's not like you can, what's called that? Let's see. If you require any technical clarification or have questions regarding the requirements, please reach out to this email address directly. We appreciate the time you're investing in the process and wish you the best of luck. And the initial email, I think the other one they said was like applicant or said, let me see what it says. Recruiting lead. Yeah, so it's inconsistent. You say this is from Bill, but you don't have your name down there. So it says best regards, recruiting lead. And I was like, that's odd. This person didn't exist at this company. I even went to the real company's name. And let me show you what I did. And the reason why I'm taking this long route of going through this, guys, is because. So if we see right here, I was analyzing the email and it gave us all these red flags. Oops, I put his name on there. Dang it. Shoot. I'm trying to go back through and not show that. But let me show you what else I did. American, So you see, I was showing you, I'm searching this thing up. So I typed in American Pasteurization Company. But let's go to the actual website real quick. Here's the actual site. And let me see if that's what y'all can see on the thing. Okay. Y'all can see it. I think it's like a little... So it's actually a real company. But as you can see, when you try to find like how to work with them, you can't really see it. Like you click on this and... You know, they have downloads of an application. Now, when I clicked on this, they didn't have any jobs. Also, when I went to LinkedIn, same people went to jobs. There are no jobs right now. Now, why do I say this? Because there has been an ongoing trend of jobs that's not supposed to be on LinkedIn being posted on LinkedIn. And because he said he applied to it on LinkedIn. But there's been this trend of that, of them showcasing and being on LinkedIn and people applying to him. Now, that seems like that would have been a typical scam where he would have did that. They would have said he has the job, and then they probably would have did the whole check scam. And I noticed because 2-3 years ago, another client had a similar email just like that where it was super easy and they wanted to pay him like $80K. I was like, nobody just paying nobody $80K because you answered a questionnaire and sent it back. So I just want to say be vigilant. If they're sending you like a PDF assessment, that's wrong. The assessments I've had to do for interviews have always been like its own type of job system. Like it's a real deal where you get credentials. They send you an email, hey, you're going to have to access this and do this assessment here. And it's legitimate. It's not anything I download and I do that. I've had one where it wasn't like that. It was legitimate as far as I had to download a it was a freaking file, but it was a file and I had to Procmon. I had to download a Procmon file and I had to go through the traffic and to see if I could list like all the ILCs and everything. But they already told me that beforehand because I talked to a person before I did that. And that wasn't anything that was just Googleable. Maybe you could have ran it possibly through AI and got the answers, possibly. But for the most part, you had to actually put in work and put in your findings and send it in. But all in all, definitely... do not do that. And so while I'm here, let's get on the stuff that y'all like to hear from us the most. Let's do our... okay, this is a couple of ones. This one is maybe the service desk isn't so bad after all. And the guy says, we all rag on the help desk and I had the chance to move off but declined to. I think I want to be a team lead when my supervisors retire. I really enjoy training new staff and doing some of the grunt work. I like being the get stuff done guy on the desk too. And I think I like if I can help others get to that level too. Now, this is great. A lot of optimism here. Truth be told, their supervisor may not ever retire. Truth be told, they might bring somebody else in and not give it to him. I'm just being honest here. And so this is good. This is some encouragement. So one guy says service management is a great field. I'm a supervisor making close to 100K. I make more than our system admin. I recommend you look into getting ITIL version 5 certificate, which is ironically, I actually sent the ITIL cert information to my cousin earlier because he has a job. And I was like, yo, go ahead and look into this ITIL bag so you could possibly get off them phones. Nothing wrong with that at all. If you like working with end users, the only real downside is the comparatively low pay of service desk. That's one of the biggest reasons that people want to move up. And this guy says, our service desk is paid handsomely, as are the managers. No issues there, honestly. Making 78K after last round of raises. Okay, that's pretty good to work help desk. I ain't gonna lie. It's not just the low pay, but it's also the fact that you've got a target on your back and you're going to get basically all the blank. So people above you are just going to bulldoze the hell out of you. That executive that waited until the last minute is going to bulldoze you. Okay, so a lot of projection here. All in all, let's get one last commenter. He said, I did service desk for 4 years. I think it's a respectable level of work, especially when you have a good team that can keep the other IT teams engaged. Even better when the other IT teams can develop good chemistry with your team so that they're constantly learning as they go as well. As confidently performing their tasks and escalations. The only problem I have with the service desk is the C-suite's view of the service desk and how they cut corners by outsourcing service desk, Cognizant, ACL, so they can please shareholders, whilst quality of service diminishes. Looking at you, CarMax and Tenet Healthcare. No, that's facts. I agree with that. I did it for 2 years, liked it. I just didn't like the low pay. I didn't like the fact that I was doing more work than other people in the company and they got paid more than me. I didn't like that. It's another one. Career guidance. Did you start over at 30? Hi, Reddit. I'm a 30-year-old and feeling a bit lost in life. I have a job, but I fear I'm not living up to my full potential. I don't love my job. I'm trying to find a new job, and I'm not having any luck. I regret not going to university when I was younger. So this person probably from the UK. I regret not going to university when I was younger. I feel as though I having a degree would open more doors for me. I wish I did things differently when I was younger. Is going back to school to get a degree a good idea? Am I wasting my time? Based off that little bit of information, no, it's not a waste of time. I would just say research the degree that you actually get and make sure that it could be useful to you. So that's what I would say when it comes to that. Also, I would like to add that, and what, let's see, what else did he say? Yeah, it's not a waste of time. Research, you can still go. It's people that start the last all the time at even later ages. So don't feel bad. Comparison is the thief of joy. The fact that you feel like you're not living up to your full potential means good. It means that you're still trying to get better. And just really take a close look at yourself. You're probably doing better than you think you are. Like, you probably got some money saved and some other stuff. You're probably doing much better than you think you are. You probably just feel like you're 30 and maybe you feel like you should have a career by now or a family. All the things come when you put in the work to do that, because honestly, it's a lot. So all in all, say it's not a waste of time. I would just say, please make sure you pay attention to the type of degree you get. And then also the job field is quite interesting, but it could be maneuvered as well. And I brought this up because it got some of my favorite sayings that I always talk about. It says, how do you actually get hired at an MSP? Any advice? Now, for one, I don't know anybody that wants to go work at an MSP because mostly it's crap. I'm looking for advice on breaking into the MSP world. I recently completed the CompTIA trifecta, but I'm feeling unsure about where to find opportunities. I'm not sure how to track down MSP roles or land my first position. I'm aiming for tier one help desk, service desk, or any entry-level IT jobs. For those working at an MSP, how'd you get hired? What helped you stand out? And what are hiring managers really looking for? Any tips will be greatly appreciated. Based on U.S. So I guess they meant based in U.S. Number one, for that type of role, it shouldn't be too hard to actually land a role, if we're being totally honest. Honestly, you just need a decent resume, decent strategy, and be able to answer some basic questions. It really shouldn't be that hard to get an MSP role. Only way I know this, because like I said, help people go from working in a warehouse to getting into help desk. So your thing needs to be all about strategy. You don't need no more certs. Like I tell everybody, that mythical trifecta that's been played out, nobody really cares anymore. You paid probably a good penny to get those, but the good thing is you do have them. If you retain some of the information and you're able to get an interview, you'll get a job, and eventually you'll probably be out of that job within 6 months to a year, because you'll realize, I want to be doing more. And I'm saying it because at an MSP. Now, it's not internally. This is where you're working at an MSP for multiple clients, and it's just not that fun. So that's my take on it. Let me see if I see peruse any good takes on it. Yeah, so they're saying the boss about saying like sell your soft skills, numbers game, all that fun stuff. So here's the last Reddit. Some guy says, first job. He says, I don't know if you still remember me, but I made a post earlier about getting my first sock job. Well, this is an update on how it actually is. And I'm going to pause it right here. Matter of fact, let me do this for this guy. Where are we at? I'm going to do that because most people have no idea what a sock is really like until they work one. So he said, most of the promises were BS. First was the training. When they hired me, the company was going through a global audit, so everyone suddenly wanted to show they were working and everything was organized. They interviewed me, hired me, promised training, and they actually did train me until the audit ended. After that, the training basically disappeared. Now everything I learned is self-study during the free time I have at work and about the work itself. On paper, I'm a security analyst. In reality, I'm doing account management most of the time. Managers send tickets like create this account, reset this account, disable this account. Users ask me to reset Gmail passwords, fix two-factor authentication, unlock AD accounts, and stuff like that. Hang on, big fella. You ain't doing sock work. You ain't doing sock work. You are doing identity access management, big fella. To be fair, evening and night shifts are like 90% free, so I can pretty much study whatever I want. The company does use enterprise stuff like Splunk, VPNs, firewalls, Active Directory, endpoint protection, etc. But the SOC itself feels weird. One security product generates around 3,000 alerts every hour, every single hour. Most of them are the exact same alerts over and over again. After some time, everyone just ignores them because they're almost always false positives, which also means if something actually serious happens, good luck fighting that and all that noise. That is something I actually said in interviews before, because of this is what happens. I bet this person is at an MSP simply because of the organization and structure around it. This is why we always tell people, some SOCs could be entry-level roles, but some SOCs not. This one is, because he ain't doing a lot of investigations or anything like that. He doing a lot of stuff that's not related to his role. And they seem like they just probably taking on clients to take on clients, and then they got all these alerts firing all the time, and this is a recipe for disaster. If I'm able to follow this guy, I'm pretty sure he'll tell us about an incident at the company eventually. We also don't have incident reports like any reports. We had a pen test before I joined where they demonstrated how they could steal a large amount of money from the company, but as far as I know, nobody documented. No report, no lessons learned, nothing. Yeah. Honestly, when you're paying for the red team and the pen test report, they're supposed to prepare that for you and send it in so you can brief it with upper management and everybody else and work on gaps that you guys didn't have, that you weren't able to catch things. And this goes like company wide. It's not just on the blue team, it's everybody, from vulnerabilities and environments and everything else. We don't really have knowledge sharing meetings either. The department lead barely remembers people's names, and there are only around 10 of us. People leave all the time and new people come in, and honestly, I can understand why. Also, most of the software I use on the work is pirated. Sim, for example. What?
Come on now, dawg. Come on, man.
But it's not all bad. The company works with an external pen testing team, and I'm hoping I'll get to watch more engagements in the future. The salary ended up being higher than what we originally discussed. Transport still eats a good chunk of it, though. I have a lot of free time doing some of my shifts. Combined with the salary, it's enough to study, build a home lab, and pay for certs. A lot of my colleagues are doing exactly that. Having a SOC L1 position in a fairly well-known company on my CV is still a huge boost compared to having no experience. Other security analysts in the team are basically golden. They are amazing. They are happy to learn, teach, help, and cover each other. They are basically the ones that I talk to get the job. One of the team members done the interview. So right now I'm thinking about treating this as a paid learning opportunity. Stay for about a year, learn as much as I can, get a few certs, and then see what happens. Somebody says, sadly, this is the norm at my experience, unless you work for a company in a highly regulated field, and then it's only slightly better and totally dependent on the type of work being done. I could never work in a SOC very long after seeing all the holes in security and knowing no matter how many times you point them out, nothing will be done about them. You want to eventually get high enough up the chain, but not too high when an inevitable breach happens and management needs a scapegoat. Yeah, this reminds me, so I've talked about it before, and I'm not going to go into a whole spiel. I got like two or three episodes on my work experience at McAfee to where it was like this kind of, but worse, because we didn't know we was doing no training. We had some training for some guys that they could never tell us what to do. We didn't have anything tuned. Only thing we worked on was WannaCry. The red team did attack on us, but we actually technically caught it. I'll tell people all the time, so I've been in interviews, I learned everything not to do at that company. And to that poster, treat it like that. Learn everything not to do and grow from it and get your experience up. But all in all, that seems like a recipe for disaster. And he said it's a well-known company. Like, let me see if I can come back and say, what's the company? Okay, so I asked what's the company initials. Now, if he ever responds to me, I will update y'all. Y'all know I will. Now, real quick, let's see where we left off at. I think the last thing that we talked about was the cloud stuff. Now, we got some other stuff. Slop Squadron and Hollow Squadron, the new AI threat. That's funny. That's a funny name. But let's get into that real quick. Grab a notebook and write down these two brand new terms, because you're going to hear them a lot over the next year. Slop Squadron and Hollow Squadron. We all know that AI language models suffer from hallucinations. You ask ChatGPT or Claude to write a snippet of Python code or recommend a website, and occasionally the AI will invent a non-existent software library or a fake URL out of thin air with total confidence, which goes back to my rant on AI with the huggable stuff. Until recently, That was just an annoying bug. But security researchers discovered that hackers have turned this exact flaw into a brilliant automated attack vector. Here's how it works. Hackers run large language models in a loop, asking them thousands of technical questions to see which fake URLs or software packages that AI repeatedly hallucinates. Once they identify a pattern, say ChatGPT constantly recommends a non-existent software package called util string parser, the hackers go out and actually create that exact package, load it with malicious code or retrofitting the hallucinated web domain. Man, this is reconnaissance on a whole new level. It's smart. I can't lie, smart. So when a developer prompts an AI for code, copies the AI suggested response, and blindly installs the package, boom, they just pull live malware directly into their software environment. It's an insanely clever trick that weaponizes the AI's own imagination against the user, turning a simple hallucination into a zero-click trap. And this is where the other AI governance part goes into, where you're trying to stop prompt injections and where you're trying to manage all different ways people can access AI in your environment. You're trying to monitor for all that and be able to have the tools that'll be having a buffer before anything gets downloaded. Hey, inspect this prompt ASAP and see what it's actually going to do. Because if you don't have that, you will have many more breaches because people just trust AI and don't verify what it's giving you. And this is why my guy Tavion was talking about how, like, yeah, AI is cool, but if you didn't really know how to do the job before AI and you just rely on it, you're not going to be as good as you think you are. If you don't really know what you're doing and all you're doing is relying on AI to create and do all these things for you, you're going to be one of the people that's susceptible to this because you don't understand the risk, because you really don't understand what you're doing. You just vibe coding. You're just vibing and pasting. That's what you're doing. So I would advise you to go learn some foundations of security, zero trust, trust but verify, and make sure you aren't trying to put malicious prompts in your environment. Inspect the prompt. See what it's actually going to. Do that. All right. Now we have hidden automotive devices leaves cars open to hacking. And I came across this on Wired because we all got cars. We all have cars. And are we ever checking, like, are we susceptible to these hacks? But so if you listen to this podcast or drive right now, you might want to keep both hands on the wheel because Wired just published a wild, alarming piece of investigative journalism. Security researchers uncovered a severe vulnerability in a specific type of connected device tucked inside millions of vehicles across the U.S. These hardware dongles and telematic modules, often installed by dealerships, insurance providers, or fleet management systems, are connected directly to the car's internal CAN bus network. That's the central nervous system of your vehicle that controls everything from your speedometer to your brakes. Researchers found that these devices have disastrous remote execution bugs. An attacker with basic networking tools could scan for these exposed modules and send malicious commands over the air. We aren't just talking about honking the horn or rolling down the windows. An attacker could remotely track the vehicle in real time, unlock the doors, or in extreme cases, completely disable the engine while the car is in motion. The most terrifying part, because these devices were often installed deep under the dashboards by third-party services or auto dealers, many of the drivers have no idea they even exist inside their cars. Telematics manufacturers are rushing to push out updates, but the physical reality of patching millions of invisible devices is a nightmare. If your auto manufacturer or fleet manager sends you a notice about telematics security update, do not put it off. Get it serviced immediately. It turns out everyone's favorite chicken sandwich isn't immune to the wave of cyber attacks hitting major brands. Chick-fil-A recently confirmed a cybersecurity incident that compromised the personal accounts of more than 13,000 customers. Now, compared to breaches that leak millions of records, 13,000 might sound small, but the way this attack happened makes it a valuable cautionary tale for all of us. This wasn't a case of hackers breaking down the front door of Chick-fil-A's main database. Instead, attackers launched a massive automated credit stuffing campaign. They bought huge lists of usernames and passwords leaked from other past website breaches across the web and used automated bots to test those combinations on Chick-fil-A mobile app. Now, this is interesting because anybody who's worked with in security or whatever, and y'all have like do a lot of business on the internet, whether you got apps or people need to do stuff at all times of the day, you're always going to monitor for bots traffic because it could be dangerous for stuff like this. So I wonder on the back end, did they see the bots traffic and was there WAF able to mitigate this attack activity? Pretty much it wasn't, because we get the 13,000 people. Heck, but let's see. Let's keep on going. For the 13,000 customers who reused their passwords across multiple sites, the bots hit the jackpot. The attackers gained access to mobile wallets, saved credit card details, rewards, and personal account info. It's a simple, unsexy reminder of a rule we all tend to break. Password reuse is a giant liability. Yes, that's why, and R should do this too, but Dashlane, and even in the past, LastPass, they would say, hey, you reused this password on a couple of sites. Please change your passwords. So a lot of times, people don't realize, they think they're so secure that hackers know that most of us reuse passwords. So if you are reusing passwords, they know, okay. Oh, their password is ABC123. Let's see how many sites with their email, and I put this in, that I can access. And that's how it happens. So you cannot reuse passwords all on the same sites. I don't care what. Like, you just never know what will happen. Please get a password manager and manage some passwords. And if you use the same password for your fast food app, bank, or email, hackers will find it. If you have a Chick-fil-A account, spend 2 minutes a day resetting your password and making sure it's completely unique. So I thought that was pretty cool. Let's see. I thought that was pretty cool. 13,000 people. So I wonder what Chick-fil-A giving them. Like, listen, I want 10 free number ones. I want a 4 count. I want all the stuff for free since my stuff got hacked on y'all things and y'all didn't protect it. Because essentially, this is on Chick-fil-A because they didn't thwart the bots enough to stop the attack, even though the people should have changed their passwords. So, yeah, privacy has been, what you call it? Well, honestly, it is on Chick-fil-A because they didn't stop it, but it's not on them about the passwords, because technically the password didn't come from Chick-fil-A. They got them from elsewhere in other breaches. So, I don't know. Pretty interesting and a fun use case, because everybody likes Chick-fil-A. But Shoddy Hunters data fuels 2006 extortion email scams. Have you checked your spam folder or even your main inbox recently and seen a terrifying email claiming that someone installed malware on your computer, recorded you through your webcam, and is demanding $2,000 in Bitcoin to destroy the footage? Man, this has been going on for years. Before all this was happening, Ben was trying to say they got a video of you. I was like, post it. Post it then. If so, take a deep breath. You are part of a massive sweeping wave of over 2,000 highly targeted sextortion scams flooding inboxes right now. What makes this specific campaign so terrifying and effective is how the scammers are personalizing the messages. They are using massive, recently linked databases originally stolen by the notorious cybercriminal collective known as Shiny Hunters. Because Shiny Hunters exfiltrated rich, authentic customer records from major corporate targets, the scammers don't just send a generic spam email. They include your actual current or past password directly in the subject line. They might list your real phone number, your old home address, or your full legal name. When an everyday user opens an email and sees their real password right there, panic sets in, making them believe the scammer really does have control of their webcam. But this is the thing. If you are a novice and this happens to you and they say they got your webcam, show me what I'm wearing right now. And before you even say this, put some tape over your webcam and see what they know. They're not going to know, but they're going to lie to you and they're going to bluff. So all you got to do is call their bluff. In the worst case scenario, they do got some of you. Okay. If they post it, you'll be able to know who posted it. They're going to let their tracks will be able to be found. But yeah, just call their bluff. Don't be scared. Don't be scared. When the everyday user opens the email and sees their real password right there, panic sets in, making them believe the scammer really does have control of their webcam. Here's what you need to know. It is a completely automated mass-produced bluff. No one recorded you. They simply bought an old database, wrote a script to insert your real personal information into a scary template, and hit send to millions of people hoping that they will panic and pay. If you receive one of these emails, do not reply. Do not pay a single cent. Mark it as spam and change the compromised password if you're still using it anywhere online. What'd I say? That's all you got to do. Call their bluff. Call their bluff. And let's see. This last article we have was about hotel Wi-Fi DNS hijacking and stealing Microsoft 365 account. If you travel for business or you're planning a summer vacation anytime soon, you need to listen up, because logging into hotel Wi-Fi just got a lot more dangerous. A new report from Bleeping Computer reveals that advanced threat actors are actively targeting hotel networks to carry out sophisticated DNS hijacking attacks aimed directly at corporate travelers. Here's how this works. When you sit down in your hotel room, connect to the open Wi-Fi network, and open your browser to log into Microsoft 365 or your company email, your computer asks the network's DNS server to direct it to the real login.microsoftonline.com. Because hackers have breached the hotel's network hardware, they alter that digital phone book without your knowledge. The network silently routes your connection to a pixel-perfect fake Microsoft login page hosted on the hacker's server. You type in the corporate email and password, hit enter, and the credentials go straight to the attacker. They can even prompt you for a two-factor authentication code in real time and pass it along to log into your actual account before realizing anything is wrong. The takeaway for anyone on the road is simple. Stop raw dogging public Wi-Fi. The moment you connect to a hotel, airport, or coffee shop network, your very first move should be turning on a trusted VPN. A VPN encrypts your traffic to end-to-end, preventing local network attackers from messing with your DNS requests or seeing where you're trying to navigate. Yeah, most company phones got a profile on them, and so they're going to make you you don't really just search the web and stuff on them, so you're going to have to connect to your own Azure or anything else through SSO. And so you better off just connecting on that with it before you get on a public Wi-Fi anyway. Now, let's have some more fun. So Marcus Hutchins has one that I think I'm going to read real quick. And he said, if you work in the SOC and have imposter syndrome, just know that if you've even so much as looked at a single security alert, you're doing a better job than OpenAI security team. And so he published the article from Time that he highlighted and said, actions carried out internally by the agents on OpenAI's Codex platform are carefully monitored. The OpenAI staffer says, but models undergoing evaluation are deployed on a separate system that is not monitored by default. Exactly. We talked about this earlier. Zach Corman, CEO of Oslo-based agent oversight startup Embroidery, says real-time agent monitoring, even outside top AI companies, is commonplace. And to not carefully oversee a cybersecurity evaluation is irresponsible. You should be confident in models cannot break free, but also have monitoring just in case you're wrong. What they say, like, where's the lotto? So that's that one. And then this other one I had was from this woman, Taylor Stonelake. So let me zoom in on this. This happened to me recently, but I know I'm not the only one. Please stop doing this to cybersecurity professionals. You asked for CISSP and CISM, Cloud, AI, DevSecOps, Detection Engineering Leadership didn't offer $45 an hour on-site with no benefits. When I politely declined, their response was, can you send me your resume anyway so we can include it in our proposal package? No, I think the fuck not. Please stop asking candidates to support proposals after they already declined the role. Respect their decisions. If you're asking one person to be your entire cybersecurity department, compensate them accordingly. If your budget is $45 an hour, adjust your expectations, not the candidate's value. What's the most unrealistic cybersecurity job offer you've received? Okay, because I don't want to put her, I'm going to check her page out because I want to see what her experience is like. Cause she got some good certs. So she got CISSP, CISM, CRISC, and let's see what her background is. Okay, so she was in the Marines for years and, Sergeant Marine Corps, but I guess then she did something for the Army. I don't know how this stuff works. I'm just reading her stuff. Okay, so when she finally got out, she was a network admin and about 4 years ago. After that, she was a senior cyber systems engineer, technical specialist for Periton. Supported more than 2,000 enterprise endpoints. Develop attack map detections. Okay, cool stuff. After that, she was a lead cyber engineer in an ISM, then a senior ISO, then a senior cyber engineer, and now is working as a blue team lead. Okay, so nice little experiences. It's all happening fast, but hey. But yeah, now, we hadn't did this in a while, waited to the end, but let's go ahead and have some fun. All right, let's have some fun real quick. This is a viral video that's been going out about this professor saying how he figured out who cheated on his midterm with AI.
32 of my 35 students between two classes failed a portion of their midterm because they all used AI to generate their entire response. And apparently they didn't proofread it. Let me show y'all how I picked up on it. So this discussion post was a portion of my students' midterm, and if you look, it looks normal, right? But if you copy and paste this and look closely, in white ink, I hid, placed the word Madagascar somewhere in the response in a way that makes no sense. But if you uncopy and paste it, you can't see it. So if Madagascar was somewhere in my student's response in a way that did not make sense, I knew that they copied and pasted the entire thing and just threw it in AI. And oh my God. You would be amazed at the bizarre usage of the word Madagascar that I saw in these students' assignments. First and foremost, Madagascar has nothing to do with the Industrial Revolution. Second, it was more than obvious that they didn't even go back and reread these responses. So yeah, 32 out of 35 students failed a portion of their midterm, and that's how. So students, if you're going to use AI to generate the entire response, at least reread it. At least try to ensure that it makes a little bit of sense. Try to put it in your own words, something.
No, he right, though. And this goes back into, let me do this. Pretty much, you got to verify what you put in the AI, man. You got to verify that. So I was telling somebody in comments, if they just copied it and then did, pasted it like a notepad, they should be able to see all the text. But you got to verify what you're posting into AI. If you're not, you're going to run into problems like this. So hopefully this is a lesson for them. Because you can't willy-nilly do it. And like I said, people want the easy then versus learning it. Because they don't, right now they don't understand why they need to do something. And I understand that, hey, these shortcuts going to hinder me in the future. And that's what the scary part is for a lot of things. Like, everybody's using AI more and more. Kids already aren't taught the same way we were, so they barely know how to read and do stuff and function like we used to. So it's going to be very interesting as these new generations. We think Gen Z is bad. These new generations, oh, man, they're going to be worse. They're going to be worse. So, yeah, I thought that was pretty interesting. Let's give my guy, let me see.
One thing that we all owe a collective societal apology to is the cubicle. The cubicle has been demonized for far too long. Oh, you don't want to rot away in your cubicle. Oh, you mean my own private office? The cubicle was not the enemy. It was everything that was happening around the cubicle. The corporate soul suck was the...
And I got to pause right here. How many people had a cubicle back in the day? So I had a... My cubicle was... it wasn't like that. I was in a cubicle. It was... I might try to find a picture of it. But we were sectioned off. It would be like spaces people could walk in between, kind of like this one. How they got space right here. But I like these better. There's still a little bit of privacy. Ours was kind of open. So you had like you had the cubicles, it'd be like this, and it'll be like one, let's see, Robert, me. So they have four people, but we all facing our screen. So you really didn't have too much privacy, but you had privacy from the people on the other cubicle side or whatever. So a lot of people try to find their cubicle spot that it was smaller by itself. But I chose mine because I wanted to be by the people who knew what they were doing. But let's continue.
Problem the whole time. And the cubicle offered you a layer of protection. Because this is what companies subbed it with. The open concept.
Yeah, that's trash.
There is no protection. People can see what's on your screen. They can bother you at any time. They can pretty much do whatever they want. Cubicle gave you a barrier of protection, a layer of protection. It was a corporate shield. And this is back when there was not that many things to distract you with. You just didn't want somebody to walk in and see you playing Tetris. Now there's way more things that you want to be able to get away with that you can't. Like, you don't want people to be able to see that you have an OnlyFans account because this job doesn't pay enough for you to afford your mortgage. But they can. They can easily see that in the open concept. Not in the cubicle. The cubicle would have been your savior. And I'll go one step further. I would like a cubicle everywhere that I go. I want a cubicle on the subway. I want a cubicle in my apartment. Because even if you're not busy, it at least gives you the illusion that you are. And that's all that we want.
Yeah, man. So, I don't know, bro. Like, I don't like the open floor plan. I know, like, when I was at GS, I detested working there because you didn't have no space. It was no cubicles. Everybody was right by each other. I did not like it. I was like, bro, no, I don't like this. I need a little bit of space. And that's at, like, a little bit after the height of COVID. So, it's like in 2021, 2022. So, people possibly... still coming in and being sick and everything. I didn't like that at all. It was a little bit better at JPMC, kind of, because you would have like a, what would it be, like a two-way or whatever. So you had like a thing in the middle. So you typically had a separator in between you and the other person, but it still wasn't cool like them cubicles right there. Let's talk about this, my guy. Zeno app. See, he's talking about the easiest pass into cyber.
These are the easiest ways into cybersecurity. So, number one, identity and access management. Why is it easy? Because at the more advanced levels, there can be engineering involved, but at the base, like entry level, it's not really doing that much. You're just doing access controls and role-based access controls. Now, the vendors for the certifications you can get are going to be Okta, there's Ping, there's SailPoint. You can also do Entra through Azure. You can do AWS's offering, and then Google Cloud Platform. Now, if you don't want to do that, you can do SOC Analyst. SOC Analyst is essentially the help desk of cybersecurity. It can get very, very technical at the deep level, like advanced, but when you first get into it, it's pretty much just like doing routine stuff. Now, you do need to have knowledge. So for that knowledge, I want you to get either Splunk certifications because they're cheap. They're like $130 each. So you can get like the Splunk certified core user and then get the Splunk certified power user, then get the cyber defense analyst. They have a whole bunch of certifications. Get like three or four, 130 each, you'll be set if you get like three to four of them. Or you could do the Blue Team Labs online. The certification is $550, but you'll be super, super nice with it when it comes to SOC analyst type roles. But it's kind of expensive. Or you could just sign up for TryHackMe. I recommend TryHackMe if you're on a budget. Next, the next thing you could do is going to be GRC analyst. And then within GRC, there's a ton of different titles within it, but you can go that route. I would recommend doing like ISO 27001, doing that certification as your first one. And then as far as labs, you could do Ithaca Labs. Now on the SOC analyst, the labs for that would be, if you're doing the Splunk certifications, you could do Splunk education. They have a ton of stuff on their website, in addition to what I said earlier. So yeah, then after that, you're going to do your resume. Once you do your resume, you want to create a section for skills, projects, all of that, because you're not gonna have that much security stuff. So that's where you're gonna put everything you learned. And then you gotta apply. Apply 20, 25 times a day. Eventually you'll get something. Good luck. Thank you, Zeno. You're the best to ever do it. I know. You're welcome.
Now, I do not agree with that SOC help desk stuff. I wrote blogs on everything, and I don't agree with that. The only time it's like that is based on that Reddit that we read. But typically in the actual SOC where you're working on actual investigations or you're doing remediations or containments, you're not a help desk. So I know why some people say that sentiment. It's because in the way people have utilized SOCs, oh, they're 24/7. We're going to make them do all this crap. But it's really not a SOC help desk, especially now as things have advanced. The fact that AIs came in and people are trying to replace L1 analysts with agents, it's not going to be this simple. And I would also say, I believe he was probably talking about Blue Team Level 1, because that's the one I direct a lot of people to. I don't necessarily say you got to get a lot of Splunk certs. You could get on TryHackMe and learn Splunk, but every SOC is not going to use Splunk. I'm going to keep you to beam. I've seen a lot of places now are migrating to Microsoft shops. So what I would say is kind of reverse. Go learn Sentinel. Matter of fact, you can set up Sentinel and just stuff in it and you'll be straight. And I'll take it a step further. Learn the cloud, whether it's AWS or Azure. If you want to do Sentinel, I'm finna get a free game plan. Get a cloud cert, whether it's AZ900 or whatever. Set up Sentinel. All those labs and stuff that you do with the AZ900, a cloud practitioner, make sure them logs are going into Sentinel. Now, you can go through and maybe see what looks malicious or not, but now you can start trying to build out detections. But if you don't understand how to build out detections, go to MITRE. MITRE can help you build out those detections. And so now, when you got these certifications, you got this actual project, because this is not a lab, this is a project. Hey, I made data points and logs for CloudTrail to come in my Sentinel environment. I created detections for, you know, public access disabled. S3 bucket is made public. Unusual IAM changes of different type of things set up in new regions not seen for the last like 90 days. You can start talking about all that stuff. So now when you go in an interview and say stuff like that, it's like, this kind of like detections we have. But a lot of that stuff you won't know, because you got to do a lot of digging and know how to search the right thing. And you can fast track that by getting with somebody that's been in the industry for years. And that is the way that a lot of people are getting in quicker or leveling up from level one or two or three, because they go find somebody that's been in the industry for a while. So definitely, definitely that. Now, what he said about IAM, I actually agree for the beginning parts. It's fairly simple. Like the guy in Asaki actually doing entry level IAM stuff, but IAM is so critical now. IAM is also paying the bag. So you can probably rise up fast there. And it's also easier because you're not in a queue. You only got your assignments. And I mean, you're probably in a queue, but it's not like working in the SOC. And then the GRC. GRC used to be a little easier to get into. And based on what I'm seeing now, it's not as easy. You're going to have to build. You're going to have to go into that engineering mind frame for GNC for the most part. But all in all, good info. I couldn't really disagree with a lot he said. I think it just changed. Splunk used to be that, but now with other tools, it's a little bit different. And let's see. So now let's have some funny reactions. Well, actually, we'll go to, this is another cyber one, and then we'll go to this other stuff. Let's see.
It's been about 12 months since I've been a SOC analyst, and one thing I've noticed is studying cybersecurity while job hunting is like changing a tire while the car's not moving. Now, let me explain. You're trying to learn all the new material, tailor your applications, prep for interviews that might really not come, and keeping your head right after every rejection. All at the same time while you have family, friends, kids. It's truly a lot, so here's what actually helped me. First and foremost, stop trying to do everything daily. I would say pick a split. 60% of it learning, 40% of applying to jobs. You'll start to see that small, consistent work will actually prevent a ton of burnout. So maybe do one lab, 5 to 10 applications, a couple LinkedIn messages to recruiters for networking, and then call it a day. And do me a huge favor, keep track of your wins somewhere, because you're going to get a ton of rejections, and looking back on those wins is going to make those rejections pretty much go away.
Yeah, I agree. I like that output. I like that attitude. It definitely can be a lot for newbies doing that, because they expect you to know a lot, and you're also trying to apply, and not knowing when to apply and getting rejected. It's a lot. And you don't even know if you have a good resume or not. AI is trying to tell you your resume is good, but AI is hallucinating when it's telling you a lot of y'all resume is good. I'm going to just keep it a bean, fam. I'm going to keep it a bean. Now, here are some funny ones that I came across. Erica actually shared this. Let me close this out quick. This. About this young lady. She was fired on like her second day of work or something like that.
I am so open and transparent with you guys. Remember how I told you guys I got a job, right? Let's do the update. Yesterday, I'm about to make an OOTD. Mind you, I told them I'm coming late to work.
All right, I'm going to stop right there. These kids worried about the wrong thing. I can tell she's young. I don't know how young, but you talking about making an OOTD on like your second day of work. Just go to work.
First day, unfortunately, I had to go to the DMV because my license was suspended. Let's wrap that up.
Okay. Also, that's not their problem. You been knew your license was about to expire. It's a date on there. You were just starting a job. You can't start a precedent for being late. Drive dirty. Drive dirty and get your license taken care of. It wasn't that important that you got it taken care of that day. You could have worked for a little while and then either schedule an appointment and leave at lunch or something, but have some professionalism. Don't do that. Don't do that. That's not important. That's not like, hey, sorry I'm late, but I have to rush my kids to the ER. You say something like that, that's totally different. That's something you didn't account of. But your license, no. It's not their problem.
Okay, I understand that, but there was literally nothing I could do about it. I get there 30 minutes late. Today, I was running.
Hold on, you was, hang on. I know you lying. I know you lying. Where is it at?
I beg your pardon?
You was 30 minutes late on day one? Unless your car broke down or something, that wasn't no reason for you to be no 30 minutes late.
5 minutes late. I kid you not. I got to the office. And I'm thinking, I don't really have to send a text. I'll apologize. It's not their business, but I was literally in pain on my period. I was really like, it was took me a long time to get out of bed. I was in pain, whatever. I still came a smile on my face, got there. By the time it looked great, had everything, all my stuff, probably clocked in, 9 o'clock, trying to clock.
So I'm not a woman, so I can't really comment on pain or whatever, but I know a lot of women deal with you do and they be to work on time. And you got to think about it. You looking at it as separate occasions. Hey, I was late today, but I was only 5 minutes late. They looking at, hey, you've been 35 minutes late on 2 days. How many minutes you going to be late the rest of the week? Matter of fact, the month or the year. You looking at it, you thinking small. They thinking big. And that is the reason why you don't understand and you're perplexed right now.
And like, let's just say 10 minutes. She was like, yeah, go ahead and clock out. You're done. And I'm like, I'm done. I'm cooked. Wow.
Yeah, it's not funny. Like, she has to be young, because that doesn't, it only, stuff like that will only make sense to somebody else who don't have any professionalism. But that is, that makes zero sense. And y'all young kids got to get it together. And I know, like, I'm thinking for me, nobody really just sat me down and showed me what to do. I kind of just learned here and there from different things, seeing my mom say different things or having to call in, like, hey, I got to take my kid to the doctor, or seeing them, making sure they dropped me off at a certain time so they could be at work early so they weren't late because they had jobs that required them to clock in. So there are different things that I noticed. Even sometimes me, like, I will send a text, hey, I'm going to be late, or this is what happened, because I don't have a clock in job. A lot of times our jobs could be stuff that's off technically out of our shift hours. So stuff like that. So I don't know. Like, that's 35 minutes late in the first 2 days is crazy. You can't justify that. Nobody cares about your excuses when you already seem like you're a person. Like, and then you didn't tell them. So now it's if you get there late, it's like, oh, you just making something up. Why didn't you say, hey, I'm not really feeling the best today. I'm pushing. I should be there at 9 or no later than 9:05. Now, at least they would still fire you. They can't say you didn't say that, hey, you had something going on and you possibly was going to be late. But, hey, it is what it is. Now, this last one that we're going to listen to, really, I found rather interesting because I thought this young man sounded completely foolish when he said this, especially when I found out some background on it, on the young man.
A lot of these black people that work 9 to 5s would have been slaves 200 years ago, and you can't convince me any different. Yeah, bro, you definitely would have ran away from the slave masters and risked dying and getting hung. But yeah, man, clock into that 9 to 5 tomorrow, bro. You're very brave and courageous. Clock into that 9 to 5 for me.
First of all, so let's level set here and what I learned about him, so then we can address what he's saying is stupid. Because like I said, he has like 66,000 TikTok followers, and they say these things, whatever. Number one, this guy is homeless. He lives out of his car, yet he is talking about people being slaves to 9 to 5s. Some people need structure. Everybody can't be a business owner. That's not slavery. They're getting paid a wage. Now, you can say a slave labor if they're not getting paid a livable wage and they're doing this other stuff. I get it. But you saying how they wouldn't do anything because they got a 9 to 5, it's much harder to go make a respectable living than it is to go out there and start doing stuff that's illegal. It's much harder to do that. It's easy to go out here and do something illegal and get some quick, fast money, but it doesn't last long. So to try to deter people from actually getting jobs is incredibly stupid. Not to mention how hard it is for us to even get jobs. And I think he does DoorDash or something else. And it's not even talking about the gig economy, but you can't try to tell a person who's making an honest living every day, oh, they would have just fell in line, or they're doing their job. What they do to make their money is different from what their ideologies and what they believe. Some people see their jobs as a means to an end, and eventually they'll do something else, or they'll get them a high-paying job where they can do everything and live life on their own terms. So that's like, when you say 9 to 5, I would say anybody that has a job. And so I definitely disagree with that, because by the same logic, I'm pretty sure you're getting paid by TikTok. You a slave to TikTok. You making this thing because, hey, TikTok going to give you some money. So I'm going to say this. I got to keep feeding the algorithm. You see how that go as we keep on just saying different things? I'm just saying, I know how this go. I just think it's stupid that you said that.
I mean, I guess, bro. The point that I'm trying to make with this is this. Everybody's a superhero. Everybody's this. Everybody's that. But don't even take the risk in their own life to see the results. The reason that people ran away from slavery was because the conditions of slavery were so uncomfortable and they were so unbearable that they would rather risk dying than stay in slavery. A lot of these guys working these 9 to 5s do not see their life as that. They are happy. They are content slaving away, working for somebody so that they can count pennies at the end of the month. They don't want to start their own business. They don't.
See, he sounds like an idiot. These conditions aren't that bad. You probably talking about people that's working fast food their whole life, but you are definitely an idiot. I have to say you are an idiot. I have to.
I don't want to open a restaurant. They want to be somebody's slave, and they just want to work for massa all day.
You're an idiot. Because let me tell you something else. When you're a business owner, you still are having to answer to other people. You don't do as you please. If you do as you please, your business will fail. So you are actually going to be slaving away more than that 9-to-5 person. And you may not even make more than the 9-to-5 person if you start a business. That's how I can tell he doesn't have a business and he's not young enough. He probably got mad. His parents told him to do something. He decided, well, I'm going to go live life on my terms and stay in my car. Like, come on, man. Y'all youngsters, technology and the some of the things that you guys feel like you should have is going to be the destruction of you guys because you do not want to sacrifice. You think you're supposed to be able to do everything everybody else can do. You think you're supposed to be, like, I can tell from your frame set of mind that you probably are not going to be a good business owner. I don't even know what your business is going to be. I might go do some more research and see what type of business owner this guy is going to be. But this is the thing. 9-to-5 people support your business. So it will behoove you to not talk about 9-to-5 people in a demeaning manner in order to get your business afloat eventually. Or you're talking about 9-to-5ers, but yet you go pick up food for 9-to-5ers. I've did Uber Eats before. So I would never get on there regardless. That's the reason why I'm in cybersecurity. Everybody knows this. I've never got on here and talked down bad about blue-collar workers. Why? That's my background. Family members come from a blue-collar family. I respect money people got to earn. I respect that. I'll never be too high up to talk down on somebody on the way they choose to make a living and take care of their family. And that is something that this young man is going to have to understand if he wants to be a successful business owner. Do not bite the hand that's going to feed you, young sir. That is what I will say, and I will bid him adieu. But, guys, we are pretty much at the end of our episode. I hope you enjoyed it. This is, like I said, what I got to do sometimes, like I do, I enjoy talking to y'all. I think I got through a lot of the articles. Some of them were a little bit too fast, but I think it was good enough to where I think the only thing I'm missing with Shorty is, like, if we get through the article, she could push back on me and say this and that. Now, some of them will require a little bit more deep dives as if we have more time, but I want to keep it moving and keep it fresh. But I hope you guys enjoy your work week. You should be watching this on a Monday. So until next time, stay textual and we out. Peace.